Now, after that, for reasons not clear to me, Shakespeare left the Lied stage in the German 19th century. It's quite true that Brahms and Richard Strauss set some of Ophelia's songs, and Hugo Wolf wrote marvellous and strangely neglected music for Midsummer Night's Dream, including the biggest hee-haw ever yet heard. Up to that moment. But however heterodox or indeed heretical this may sound, I believe that only in the 19th century and only then the German masters of the song motif could actually enhance Shakespeare. The Italian school, bless them, worked one better. What they did was to transcend Shakespeare. I personally have to say that I find both Falstaff and Othello, by Verdi and Boito, actually preferable to the Shakespearean originals. I can think of no higher praise than that, but even in those masterpieces, I still miss the precious quality I've been trying to define and describe. What I miss is motivic inspiration in the music, which directly derives from a Shakespeare phrase, or an image, or an idea, whether lyric or dramatic. I don't hear that. And for that, I think we have to turn to the English 20th century non-operatic sources in the song motive tradition. Well, I'll select a very few among very many in this century. Philip Heseltine, also known as Peter Warlock, was a born songwriter, and in my view, a great and neglected master of that genre. He studied and he understood Elizabethan and Jacobean literature more and better than anyone of his time. And he offers motivic writing of exactly the kind I've been trying to describe. If you take his setting of It Was a Lover and His Lass from As You Like It, it begins with a chime of bells like this. In six. And we add the melody. Now, it begins with the chime of bells because springtime is the only pretty ringtime in every sense of that expression. The third verse begins, this carol they began that hour, with a hey and a ho and a hey nonny no, how that life was but a flower in springtime. And at that word carol, and nowhere else, Warlock plays an extra cabibol in the right hand. Now, what that rhythm is the rhythm of in springtime, the only pretty ring time, which Warlock treats like this. And he comes in there because he's trying to tell us exactly what Shakespeare is trying to tell us. Carol is a very rare word in Shakespeare, very rare indeed. And it means always church music. Now, the country lover and his lass are anything but pious in this poem. The only pretty ring time means not only engagement, but marriage. Always in Shakespeare, always, the thought of marriage entails the thought of serious ritual. He cannot mention or contemplate marriage without thinking of rites and rituals and weddings and solemn vows. And he can do that briefly, and he can do it lightheartedly, but that's always in his mind, and Warlock hears this. So he's absolutely right and very perceptive in hearing wedding bells from the outset, and then later setting the steeple swinging in his nuptial peal. Just at that word carol, it's absolutely right, just at the moment when that word is mentioned. Now, also take the Warlock setting of some equally famous verses from Love's Labour's Lost. The first verse is ostensibly about springtime flowers, and very pretty they look too, when daisies pied and violets blue and lady smocks all silver white. Lovely. But this is the troublesome season of the cuckoo, who, according to Shakespeare, mocks married men. And the next flower he mentions, the very next flower, is a cuckoo bud, or yellow hue. nobody's ever identified this flower. I think it doesn't exist. I think he just made it up. And he's made it up because he has in his mind the idea of cuckoos and cuckoldry and deceit and deception. And this idea has somehow sneaked into the poem long before we even hear the first cuckoo in the lyric. The mocking of married men was already deep in the married Shakespeare's mind long before this lyric started. And if you read the poem with that in mind, you hear something like a paranoid obsession with this topic. And this comes through in Warmock's setting, which is actually called mockery. Cuckoos keep on popping up. All over the place, like whole wallfalls of cuckoo clocks in every bar. Right and left, before, behind, upside down, inside up, in single notes, or chords, or bigger chords, or discords, as the music implies, and even as inversions. As if the wretched bird actually ooed before it cooked. It does everything. It's everywhere. It's in every note of every bar, I have to tell you. And the song ends by turning the cuckoo into a hee-haw. As if married men are not only cuckolded and mocked, but actually made asses of. And a reading of the poem confirms that this is indeed a Shakespearean subtext. It's actually what he's saying, duly noted and then notated by the composer. Well, you may think that recipe has been overcooked. And I quite agree, but Warlock, you see, has seen something which is actually in the poem, actually in the text, something genuinely Shakespearean, and he's made us hear it. After all, no harm has been done. The verses are still there, available for resetting, aren't they? And, actually, in the most recent version I know, by Mervyn Horder, something very similar happens. It's a much simpler song. But even there, as soon as this awful bird is named, the cuckoo then on every tree mocks married men, as soon as you hear his name, long before his actual call is recorded, you hear him secretly practicing and rehearsing for this terrible call he's going to hear. On every tree, and in the piano, and in this voice part. It actually starts rehearsing its call. And it does that entirely unconsciously, I'm sure. The composer had no such intention. But he also picks up from the lyric the obsession that Shakespeare is expressing in this lyric. Now, it's when two creative minds are attuned like that, acting in concert, that the song motive sounds to me at its most meaningful and effective. I don't think it matters whether such results are deliberate or unconscious. The essential element, I think, is a recognition of the symbolism and how it reinforces and enhances the total aesthetic effect.